Today's program has been brought to you by Kane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit Kane5.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning and welcome to Taste Matters with Mitchell Davis. I'm your host, Mitchell Davis, Vice President of the James Beard Foundation, and every Wednesday at 11 o'clock, tune in for a live conversation about my favorite subject, taste. Actually, for the last few Wednesdays, did I say Wednesdays or did I say Saturdays? I think I said, okay, Wednesdays. Yes, Wednesdays at 11 o'clock. But the last few Wednesdays, I wasn't here. And so I want to put a special shout out of thanks to my guest hosts, Isabella Wojcik, who is the program director at the James Beard Foundation, and Karen Karp, who is a consultant on sustainable agriculture and sort of food system infrastructure. So did a great job with really interesting conversations. We're always trying to bring in interesting ways to think about food and to think about the importance of food in our culture. And today is no exception. We're welcoming back to the studio David Weber, who's the president of the New York City Food Truck Association, also happens to be co-founder of Rickshaw Dumpling, one of our favorite trucks. And I've asked David to join us in the studio because you may have heard about the relief effort that the food trucks played a particular role in for the Superstorm Sandy. We can't call it Hurricane Sandy because by the time it hit us, it wasn't a hurricane, but it was as devastating as any storm has ever been. And I think it's a really interesting to talk to David, and thank you for joining us here in the studio, about the role that the trucks played, because I think that they helped to solidify, in addition to obviously feeding people in different areas that were without all sorts of necessities and continue in some places to be without some of the basic necessities of life, but they also helped really rally this new and growing culture of food trucks. So thank you for joining us, David, and let's hear a little bit about the story.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's really a pleasure to be here again. And it was a terrible travesty. This storm had a really negative impact on a large part of New York City, especially the outlying areas. And one of the things we realized right from the start is that food trucks are really well suited to relief efforts. Food trucks are self-sufficient. They're relatively nimble, they're mobile, and a lot of the operators move their trucks during the storm so that they could be at high ground, so they wouldn't be affected by flood damage, and then immediately after the storm, even in areas that didn't have power, these trucks have generators, and so they were ready to go out, right as soon as the storm had passed.
So the storm hits, it was Sunday night, if I recall, because that morning I went out for bagels and rye bread and thought everything would be fine and the skies were gray, and then the next day was horrible. How did you guys mobilize, or who had the idea, who made the first contact, and how did the process begin?
Yeah, so at the beginning we just really encouraged the trucks internally to do what they could. A lot of the members of the New York City Food Truck Association, they're small businesses. They don't have a lot of means to help, but they did what they could. So as early as that first night, Nuchas Empanadas was out at the hurricane shelter at Baruch, and they gave away 1,000 empanadas, and other trucks were doing similar things. And many of the trucks lost power at their kitchen facilities. So there was a lot of drop-offs as well, where the trucks would take, for instance, Taum, donated all their pita and all their hummus to a hurricane shelter in Red Hook. And those trucks that lost food still had generators. And so a lot of trucks would go out and just run radio programs off the generator and give people the opportunity to recharge their cell phones and other electronic devices.
Oh, really?
So that's where it all began. And then slowly, we started raising money to allow the trucks to do outreach. Again, being small businesses, they could only afford to do a limited amount of outreach on their own. And the first partner that we had was JetBlue, who was amazingly generous. And that was by Thursday, I think. And from th- Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, basically financed the food to give out 25,000 hot meals in New York City, in Brooklyn, and Queens.
So, and these were meals. So the these were meals to residents and relief workers and everybody who could. Who needed to be fed out there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what we were focusing as on people who'd lost power, who didn't have the ability to have a hot meal. And like, I think that we can all agree that there's something incredibly restorative about getting a hot meal.
Sure.
And it's those basic necessities that you miss the most when you lose power is that hot water for a shower, that hot cup of coffee in the morning was one of the most in-demand items out there. And so the goal was really to get hot meals out to those residents who had their homes destroyed or were without power, and also to the first responders and the relief workers who were out there supporting them to try and restore that infrastructure, the Con Ed guys and the other repair workers trying to get things working.
So you've got about 45, 50 members of the association, and they run the real gamut. I mean, I imagine just from what I see in my neighborhood during the day, from schnitzel to dumplings to whatever, empanadas, were the trucks out there serving the food they normally serve, or were they just cooking food that people wanted to eat?
Yeah, I think everyone wants to keep their brand intact.
Sure.
So they wanted to, you know, share what they do best, but do it in a way that was affordable for the sponsors. So I think that there's a little bit of tweaking of menus to make sure that there's something really substantial and warm, but still true to the nature of the truck. So, you know, you see operators like Waffles and Dinkes serving waffles, you know, and coffee, which
right.
was in high demand
everywhere. Sure.
And, you know, the kimchi taco truck serving kimchi tacos
really?
And a lot of rice bowls with protein from the taco trucks. So people, I think, stayed pretty true. And again, this is what these trucks specialize in is serving large volumes of food hot to people who need it. Mm-hmm. And it all began really, I think, with JetBlue gave us the resources to really get things started. And that's where it sort of spurred us into action to go to the next step. We tried to raise some money on Indiegogo. Our goal was to raise $7,000, and we ended up raising $27,000 in the first 2 days.
Wow.
And ultimately raised about $50,000 that way. There were a bunch of corporate sponsors that stepped up, including Liberty Mutual, Chase, UBS, Havas, Morgan Stanley, Glamour, Time Warner, many others. And these additional sponsors and the work we were doing eventually got us on the radar of the Mayor's Fund to advance New York City. And that was really transformative because we'd done a fair amount of outreach. Again, 25,000 hot meals through JetBlue is very substantial. But the relationship with the Mayor's Fund to advance New York City really transformed the effort, first and foremost, aside from the resources they were bringing to sponsor the food. They had amazing knowledge of what was happening on the ground. Mm. And one of the biggest challenges for us was finding the locations where food was needed the most. And so having a partner that was in touch with national, federal outreach, state outreach, local outreach, and also in close relationship with nonprofits doing outreach like the Red Cross, really allowed us to target these trucks in areas where they were needed the most.
Hmm. And wow, what an interesting story. Is this the first time something like this has happened that you know of?
As far as I know, I mean, obviously, the idea of using a food truck to supply food after a storm when the power is out is pretty intuitive and obvious
sure.
in a lot of ways. But I think that the scale of this effort is unprecedented, so far as I know. And I think that the sort of public-private partnership that has happened through this is also sort of novel. But I think that there's a lot of benefits to this. Again, the food trucks bring a lot to bear in terms of their resourcefulness and their nimbleness. These trucks, in order to be successful street vending, they need to find people. They need to be able to watch patterns and how people behave. They look for, you know, patterns in traffic, pedestrian flow, hubs of the community. And this is exactly the same sort of skill set you have when you're sending people out to try and do relief in the most effective way possible.
Right. It's impressive. The first thing that comes to mind is the post 9/11, where there was a similar situation, a totally different but similar situation, that people needed basic resources, staples of life and food. And restaurants at that time had been engaged in some way and were feeding workers and also residents and all that sort of thing. But the food truck movement, if you can call it that, of late has been so rich in the cultural fabric of the city that in some ways it seems... an obvious but timely association of mobile eating at a certain level, and also, you know, serving people the things that they need.
I totally agree. There's been a big transition. There's been a shift in the way street vending has been happening in New York City. I think that after 2007, 2008, you really see the rise of the modern food truck, the branded, differentiated food truck that's, you know, engaged with social media and really specializing in one particular type of cuisine. And the infrastructure of the organizational infrastructure of the Food Truck Association, obviously we were here starting in 2011, and having the relationship that we've built up over time with the city, I think, and the infrastructure that exists now in terms of the technological infrastructure of social media, Twitter, Facebook, and the wide prevalence of smartphones, and the ability to communicate and dispatch with these trucks on the fly, I think was all sort of paramount in coalescing to this moment that allowed us to do this outreach the way we did.
I'm going to come back to that point. Let me remind people listening that you can call if you have questions or comments, or maybe you were the beneficiary of some of this impressive effort. You can call us at 718-497-2128 if you're listening now live, or else you can write us an email at info@heritageradionetwork.org. You can also tweet us. Perhaps you're listening to the podcast, which is popular. We're available on iTunes. And you can send us a question at Taste Matters HRN, and we'll get it to you. And perhaps we'll answer you directly on Twitter, or we can follow up in a subsequent show. So let's talk a little bit about the technology aspect and how that helped, logistically orchestrate this effort. As an organization, I imagine that you were sort of bare bones and not really like a large taxi dispatcher or something like that. So when you had more members than just the 45 members of the organization participating in this, how did you ramp up?
Yeah. Well, the primary goal of the Food Truck Association is advocacy, and we're really primarily focused on working with the city to educate the administration and city council and the community in general about the ways in which street vending has changed, and trying to work out a regulatory environment that's better suited to allowing this industry to thrive, provide more jobs, provide more culinary options, improve tourism, and incubate new businesses here in New York City. So obviously, charity outreach is not one of the core disciplines of what this organization does. And at the time this started, at the end of October and the beginning of November, we had one part-time employee who was mostly focused on social media. So it was a big transition for us to recruit the team that was necessary. And again, I think that being in New York City helped a lot. Mm-hmm. We brought on a production team, one of whom, Kate, you're awesome. Thank you so much for what you did. You made the whole thing happen. But we brought on a bunch of a production team to create a real-time dispatch. And basically, it allowed the trucks to communicate with one central location, so that if they got on location and, let's say, by 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, they weren't really seeing the pace of customers, mm-hmm. clientele, as it were, we would redispatch them to a location where they were needed more. And so dispatch was in touch with the mayor's office and the Office of Emergency Management, and basically was provided with the information real time in order to get help where it was needed the most. Mm-hmm. And I think that having trucks out there with smartphones that could connect with not just voice, but also data, and like being able to email and real time updates in terms of Twitter, posting on our blog where the trucks were going to be. All of this happened, you know, pretty much in real time with a skeleton team of, you know, one full-time dispatcher and one sort of social media person to just keep things coordinated.
Right. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll talk more with David Weber, the president of the New York City Food Truck Association, about that association and its part in the Sandy relief effort, and also perhaps a little bit more about the future of food trucks in New York City. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to Piece of Your Pie by Snowmine on heritageradionetwork.org. Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery. Thank you for listening to the show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. For more information, visit cane5.com.
Welcome back to Taste Matters. I'm your host, Mitchell Davis, and I'm talking with David Weber, the president of the New York City Food Truck Association, who was one of the lead coordinators in the Sandy relief effort that the trucks were integral in helping to make happen. Tell me, this may be a personal thing, although I think I share this with a lot of people listening and people who were not immediately involved in the relief effort, but we watch the news a lot and we donate money to Red Cross and we hear about FEMA and the politics of it all. From the ground, can you comment on what you saw, what your perceptions of the relief effort were, whether or not help was getting to people? You know, New York had not faced something like this before, and yet it seems that we really rallied, as we often do, to support the people who needed it most.
Overall, I think it went really, really well. Obviously, the devastation that was caused was a lot more persuasive than what we'd seen in the past, looking back at Hurricane Irene. You know, from my perspective, I felt like it was coordinated very well. Obviously, you know, parts of the Rockaways were completely devastated, and it looked almost completely like a war zone in certain neighborhoods. And there's still, to this day, a lot of acute need in those neighborhoods. But I think that the politicians and, you know, the not-for-profits really rallied and coordinated well to get help out to those who needed it most.
And actually, we have a question from Twitter that I think was right on the top of my mind also. And it's from Jennifer Lozinski. And she asks whether or not this effort has helped your advocacy relationship with the mayor's office and whether or not you believe, I mean, obviously it may be too soon to tell, but there'll be a deeper understanding of the value that you contribute to the city vis-a-vis some of the other people jockeying for space on the streets.
Yeah, I think that it does help because it furthers the relationship and the trust between the parties. Obviously, we've met a lot more people in the mayor's office through this effort. They had a huge team focused on this. And for them to see that we are professional, we're community-minded, and we're really looking out for the best in New York City, I think it goes a long way. You know, it was a really proud moment for us to be able to partner with the city. And that step, which was really facilitated by Seth Unger of the Food and Film Festival, was really, really sort of a monumental transition to sort of be in partnership with the administration to a certain degree. And I have this press release from November 6th, which just makes me really happy, where Mayor Bloomberg announces a new hot food service at City Real Life sites through a partnership with local food trucks. And he says, quote, working together with food trucks who can provide residents in devastated areas with a lifeline is great, and we're grateful for the partnership that can help provide much needed relief to affected New Yorkers. I think this is amazing, and it really is, and it was a moment for the food trucks to shine. They had this infrastructure in place. They have the generators. They were mobile. They could get where they needed to go. And I think they really rose to the occasion and provided help where it was needed the most. And it was really appreciated by the community at large.
Fantastic. Interestingly, many of these communities probably weren't the sites of food trucks, I imagine, because people work in Manhattan and have lunch in Manhattan or wherever the bigger density of people is. Do you think that might something might arise of that in the outer boroughs, or will there be more opportunities?
Yeah, hopefully so. I mean, it's always great for the entrepreneurs to broaden their scope.
Sure.
I think that sometimes people get a little myopic and they really focus on Midtown, and I need to be in Midtown. At their corner. But New York City is a huge place. There's all sorts of opportunities, and there's little pockets of opportunities everywhere. When you're a food truck, you're a small business, you might need 100, 200 customers a day to keep the lights on. And, you know, there's a lot of places in a city of 9 million people to find 100 customers. So hopefully this is eye-opening.
Sure. 100 customers, is that the number?
I think it varies a lot depending on what your business is.
Right.
Obviously, you're going to need more customers if you're selling cookies for $1 each than if you're selling lobster rolls for $20 each. You know, every business has its own unique challenges, its own, you know, sort of different cost structure. You don't need 10,000 customers a day to survive. You only need a couple hundred.
Well, I'll remind people, if you have questions, you can call us at 718-497-2128 or email us at info@heritageradionetwork.com. You can also tweet us at TasteMattersHRN. You're coming into the winter season, which I imagine is a slow season for street food in New York, although if winter continues as the fall has been, it'll be a good one. What happens in the winter with the trucks, and how does business survive?
Yep, food truck is very seasonal. A lot of people anticipate that summer is actually the best, and as it turns out, it's in this market. Fall and spring are actually great, because that's when the weather's the best and everyone's outside. Once it gets too hot, that scares people away a little bit. And obviously when it's too cold, it's usually those transition days that are the worst. The first snow, when people go to work, they don't have their boots on or a big parka. But New Yorkers are hardy. And so after the first day of the snow, they acclimate and things get better. Business is definitely down in the winter in general. And some of the trucks that really focus on, you know, frozen treats, obviously they're going to close for the season. And most of the savory trucks, trucks that can operate year-round, will be not seeing the sales they would be in the peak season. But that's just part of the ebb and flow of street vending. And so it's the slow season right now. But, you know, last year was a very mild winter, which helped a lot. And, you know, fingers crossed, it's a mild winter again this year.
Of course. What percentage of food truck operators do you think aspire to have a bricks and mortar place versus those who just like being on the street and like to be able to drive around?
Well, you know, I think that there is this idea in mobile food that you can just, you know, drive, and it's so simple to like drive and find these opportunities. And in fact, it's quite a hard vocation. It's a very scrappy, difficult labor. Intensive and physical job, and most operators, after they've been doing food trucks for a little while, really long for the stability of a brick and mortar restaurant. And about a third of the members of the New York City Food Truck Association actually run brick and mortar establishments. And one of the really exciting things that we've seen over time is over the past 4 or 5 years, about a dozen food trucks in New York City have opened brick and mortar, and none of them have gone out of business. And I think that that's something really interesting and really special, because sort of anecdotally you're always hearing 50% of new restaurants in
or
New York City
90% you hear sometimes
going out of business in the first 6 months. And I think you really learn something being on the street. You understand where who your customer is and where they are. And so when you take that big step of signing a lease in New York City and putting down that big deposit, hopefully you've done your homework, you know who your customer is, and you know that you're in a place where they are and you're relevant. So I think I see mobile food as a great incubator mm-hmm. to grow a business and set up shop not just as a mobile operation, but as a brick and mortar. And oftentimes you see people even branching into retail. Van Leeuwen Ice Cream is a great example. You can get pints, you know, in Whole Foods.
That fact alone, I think, or what you've just described, ought to be reason enough for the mayor to think that you're a great asset to the city. If you're turning people, not just adding to the color of the street life, but turning into small businesses and with a success rate that you mentioned, seems remarkable.
Absolutely. I mean, when a restaurant goes out of business, it really doesn't serve anyone. You know, that's just a giant waste of capital, of resources, of a landlord's time. So it really is a more efficient allocation of resources when you give these small businesses the opportunity to incubate and learn about who their customer is, how their operation should work, how to brand in a way that's relevant, and then grow slowly from there.
Fascinating. So let's get back to the Sandy Relief. When did it stop? When did the sort of official organized relief effort stop?
Yeah, the sponsorship from the Mayor's Fund began on the 6th of November, uh-huh. and it ended at the end of November. And the goal of the outreach always was to sort of get help out to little pockets of the city that needed it most mm-hmm. and augment the more established outreach that was being provided by FEMA and by the Red Cross. And there's a lot of efficiencies of being able to work out of a stable location. And so the sponsorship goes farther through the Red Cross. And so that transition was complete by the end of November.
I see. And we talked earlier, before we were on the air, about some of the transition, sort of the wanting to put the business back into the local communities also being a bit of a pressure about determining when to stop.
Absolutely. One of the things that the Red Cross can do really well in a more permanent fixture is to be able to discern who's a resident in the neighborhood, who has lost their home, who's without power, and provide meals more tactically to those members of the community that need it most. And as more resources are going to support contractors to come in and help with the relief, help with construction, help with cleaning out houses. Those people that are being paid to do relief effort, they want those relief workers supporting local businesses. And with restaurants coming back online, it's really important that these relief workers are buying lunch from the restaurants in the local community to help them rebound.
And has that be, do you know? Do you have evidence that that's happened, or how are those restaurants doing? We keep hearing, even just in Manhattan, the downtown restaurants are still finding it quite difficult to stay afloat.
Yeah, it's a big step back, I think, for the hospitality industry. I mean, it was obviously going without power for a day means that all your raw materials are gone, and it's a big cleanup effort. And then, you know, as people, I think in general, there's just like this reflex to hunker down, you know,
sure.
like, so in the wake of the storm, people are doing a little bit more at home, you know, just more focused a little bit internally than externally. And so I think it's been hard for the hospitality industry everywhere, but even harder out in the Barrier Islands, you know, to have had the physical infrastructure destroyed.
Right.
And so as soon as they're at a point where they can be working again, their rent obligations are still there. And so we really want to see customers supporting them to the broadest extent that they can.
Fantastic. So those of you listening, if you have to make plans to do something, go do it in an area that could use the support, the economic support that hasn't stopped.
Dinner in Breezy Point or dinner in Red Hook, for sure.
Yeah. So if people want to find out more about the New York, the food truck organization or just want more about how to start a food truck or how to support what you're doing, how do they do that?
NYCfoodtrucks.org. Please go to our website, and the first thing we'd really appreciate if you do is sign our online petition to just pass along to the administration that you appreciate what food trucks are doing in New York City, and also follow us on Twitter at NYCfoodtruck.
Thank you for being here, David, and thank you for the work you do and for the way you make New York fun and delicious on the street, you and your organization. Next week, speaking of trends in food, we are going to welcome back Adam Rappaport, who is the editor-in-chief of Bon Appetit magazine, and we're going to be talking about what happened this year in food, in restaurants and cooking, home cooking, but also what to look forward to in 2013. I'm sure food trucks will be even more on the radar, but who knows what they'll be serving. That's what we're going to be talking about. Every Wednesday, we talk about taste and food here on Taste Matters with me, your host, Mitchell Davis, or sometimes my guest hosts. But in the meantime, eat something delicious, do it at a place that could use your business, and help support the cultural fabric and the culinary fabric of New York City when you do it. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.